I am afloat on the East River, rocking on the waves when I hear a song. Silence covers the city and wraps me in darkness. In front of me, it is still night. But behind me, to the east, all the day stands ready to arrive. In a moment, the sun will burst above the horizon on Long Island, and the city of New Amsterdam will wake and stir. By noon, we will feel the thin warmth of April, half winter and half the promise of spring. I am happy to be alive on the water and to smell the salt. As I pull my canoe up onto the frosted grass of my orchard, the song comes again, carrying itself over the lap of the water and my heavy steps. The melody is unknown to me, but somewhere inside myself, I meet the voice that sings it. I feel certain that it comes from close by. For a moment, I forget where I am, in the new world, in New Amsterdam. I feel myself lifted into the past, to the great level, where first I heard that voice. I do love novels that take us to places we've never been before, to meet people who, for all the differences in time, differences in place, differences in experiences, are people we come to enjoy meeting, people we look forward to learning about, people we bring into our own lives, if only for the course of a novel. Call Upon the Water is just such a novel, set elsewhere in time and place, a novel of hope, of despair, and of the power of the human spirit to prevail. As our story opens, it is April, 1644, in New Amsterdam, the early Dutch colony in the New World of North America. New Amsterdam, though built on the same island and lands that boast New York City today, was a different place than the New York we know today. Springtime for sure than is now, but this proto-New York City was being settled by people who were still closely connected to their old world homes, those homes in which they came to adulthood, so much so that they made every effort to transform their new world into a world like that of the continental edge from which they came. So it was that these Dutch transplanted to North America could find comfort in a new world they could then understand and relate to. Our initial narrator, the fellow you heard there at the opening, is a single, 40-something, taciturn Dutchman. Jan is an engineer by training, by inner passion. He's most comfortable when taking the measure of the world around him, be that of the 2,000 other souls of New Amsterdam, or of the physical world which he has determined to shape to his and his compatriots' understanding and use. For Jan is a man of the physical world, a man living in a culture that values both the nether spaces between land and sea, between wet and dry. A man whose cultural urge is to bring clarity to the world he knows, a clarity that distinguishes clearly between the solid earth and the flowing waters of the sea. Indeed, that is a constant echo of the book's title as we move from chapter to chapter, New Amsterdam, and soon enough, Tidewater Virginia's life stories. A letter is delivered to Jan's door one fine morning, a letter from someone from the past, whom he remembers fondly. Have they returned to his life, so far away in New Amsterdam? The story of Jan and the letter's author will unfold in our pages as these pages turn, coming to a quiet crescendo in both their lives by the end of our story. Early on in this story, the author offers us the novel's conceit, jolted by the arrival of that letter. He has set himself the task of writing his life story. Though he is not comfortable with words, he tells us they are slippery things. His is a life story that begins in a small Dutch town, reclaimed from the sea. And it takes him, as a young and aspiring engineer, to the world of Cromwell's London, where a family connection introduces him to the monumental task of reclaiming dry land from a watery world of fens in the north of England. Jan is assigned to be a lead engineer in draining the huge wetlands that border the town of Ely, and his career prospers. He comes to know a life of earnest and rewarding work beyond the small town life from which he came, and he falls in love with a native woman of the fens, a woman named Elijah, with whom he comes to share his dreams, his cabin, his life. A woman who we know from our reading will come to haunt Jan's dreams in his heart ever since they met, and Jan will haunt her as well. But as he fears from the start, not everyone around the godforsaken town of Ely is thrilled to have the huge drainage project underway. The longtime residents of the area, who make their way in the world by fishing, by hunting, by eeling, making do with little in the way of material goods, are suspicious and downright hostile to the changes being made to their lands. Cromwell's soldiers on the site are less than pleased to be stationed so far from their homes. And it all comes to a head one late fall day when the hard-won battle to separate the land from the waters, engineered by Jan and his fellow Dutch engineers, are sabotaged, so Jan tells us, by person or persons unknown. The eruption of the waters back to their natural state of being is magnificent, as they naturally reclaim their watery land, but deeply depressing to Jan. And so the story comes full circle to the novel's beginning, as the reasons for his transplanting himself to New Amsterdam come into focus. His lover, Elijah, is sent away, blamed as one of the saboteurs of the grand engineering work, and taken off to serve as an indentured servant in the New World on the plantations of Virginia as punishment. His lover ripped away from him, Jan throws himself into reclaiming at least some of the land from the resurgent water, enough, over time, for him to feel some vague satisfaction of having repaired the damage that had been wreaked upon his long work in the fens. But he is restless, and though Jan returns to his Dutch homeland, that return brings him not solace, but a never-ending sense of ennui. Then one summer's day, he finds himself in the Amsterdam office of the Dutch East Indies Company. A conversation with a fellow visitor leads Jan to decide his fate leaves him little to pursue in the old world. Perhaps in the new world, he can put his engineering knowledge to work. And perhaps, just perhaps, he can put the past behind him and begin anew. Meanwhile, the story of his lover, of Elijah, once again unfolds in these pages of the story as well, taken away as an indentured servant to the newly founded English plantations in Virginia. Elijah's life is transformed in the new world because of her long ago association with the love of her life, Jan. With him, oh, so long ago and so far away, she learned to love and to hone the skills of separating water from land. So it is that their mutual love for engineering comes to bind them both in spirit and enterprise, if no longer in physical proximity. There is a winning emotional punch of call upon the water's two protagonists. And yet the other most winning aspect of this novel is its depiction of the watery worlds in which Jan, his fellow Dutch engineers, and Elijah and her fen people live, work, and know as uniquely their own. It is a sense of being, a sense of place, that is beautifully painted on every page of the novel, as the great Dutch painters of that period favored the sparks of light peeking out from the dark background that surrounds them. So author Stella Tilliard paints a somber world, whether it be in Jan's native Holland, Cromwell's London, the godforsaken fens around Ely, or the brighter lit spring worlds, the Dutch colony on Manhattan Island, in the English plantation world that Elijah discovers and becomes a part of. As you heard, Jan is by training and by inner nature an engineer. His passion is to measure the world around him. But even as he self-identifies as a man of mathematics and of geographic place, Stella Tilliard takes us deeply into Jan's richly conflicted emotional life and that of his lover, Elijah. His sense of loss for his beloved, But even as he self-identifies as a man of mathematics and of geographic place, author Stella Tilliard takes us deeply into Jan's richly conflicted emotional life and that of his lover, Elijah's, as well. His sense of loss for his beloved brings him to wrestle with the meaning of the past, the present, and the future, even as he is transported across the wide Atlantic on the small ship to what he hopes will be a new life, a new start, a new Amsterdam. And in an inversion of Jan's life, so it is too with Elijah. We come to see her wrestling with her past, her present, and yes, her future, as she is transported as well into the new world, albeit not as a welcome change. Perhaps it has always been such for those who risk the unknown and seek a new life in a new world. As I said at the outset, Call Upon the Water is a book of memories, of hopes, of unrequited love. It is the story of two very different people, drawn together by love in the water world of the fens, then ripped apart by fate, tossed onto the shores of the new world of North America to wrestle with their past and determine their own very different futures. I want to end by reading from near the end of the novel, but not quite the end. In this section, Jan is struggling with life in the new world, remembering Elijah, and giving us some real insight into what it's like to be a transplanted person from the old world into the new. As he tells us, "I am a man who has tied himself from his old life and is free to find another. My family makes no objection. The West Indies Company being well known and respectable. New Amsterdam is a place of near 2,000 people, and I am sure to find work, if drainage is proposed. There is nothing to keep me here in the old world, and more than that, I am ready to leave. For many days, the past and the future seem suspended as I travel across the Atlantic. My small cabin is situated just under the main deck, a few feet above the waterline. At night, I lie knees up in my short cupboard bed. I listen to the ship's hull stretch and creak as it parts the ocean. At first, the sea invades me. Night after night, I dream I am swimming through it and wake into terror, being uncertain the instant of where I am, if not drowned. Then I remember I took passage from Amsterdam, and I am afloat. When I stand on the deck, I expect to hear your voice in the hum of the wind on the sails, or that I will see you somewhere far off in my mind, and you will speak to me. But for weeks, you are not there, either near or far. When I find you in my memory, halfway across the ocean, you do not come towards me. I know that I must decide, since love itself is a decision. How will I be with you? How confront or accept you? The choice out on the ocean is a simple one, to turn away from you or to take you with me. Looking out at the gray sea, where no man I know regards me or even knows that I am here, I understand that the choice is mine alone, the consequence mine alone also. The days gone by still stand before me, all of them, and all that happened, in the fens also, but I do not have to see or regard them. I can push through them as easily as the prow of the dolphin parts the waters of the sea. I can forget. I can rub you out in the way a child rubs chalk off a slate, and I can begin again. No one I meet in New Amsterdam will ever know about you or the flood. More than that, I can deny you and the whole great level to the world and to myself. It is said that the contrary of to forget is to remember. Yet that axiom sounds now like something learned at school, a verse recited or a catechism, just a story in language. The contrary to forget is to remember. I see now it is to be a part of, to live with, and to share. I watch the ocean disappear behind me and know that a life without a past is a thin one, a life starved of voices and nourishment. I will not forget. I will let memory live. And you, Elijah, live within it. And so too within me. You will be a part of me, sharing my new life and my old, and I will stay true to myself and to you." The story continues. Jan lands in New Amsterdam, makes a life for himself, as we learn early in the novel, and we return then to Elijah, her transport across the ocean, her similar sense of wonder, of surprise, of questioning. Can she live with the past into the present, even more importantly, into the future? It is a book that, as other reviewers have said, truly asks us to think beyond ourselves, to put ourselves in the minds of another, to question what life is, what it can be. Call Upon the Water, a novel by Stella Tilliard. It is a fantastic read, one I hope that you will get to enjoy as well. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library, and on Overdrive Libby, so you can download it and read it on your favorite e-reader if you'd like to as well. Thank you for listening.